Pleased to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to begin our program today, as I mentioned a little earlier, by talking with you about Alzheimer's disease. It's a terrible disease. My mother died of Alzheimer's, and it was a very long and tough death for her, certainly. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if you know someone, maybe you have a relative, or maybe you have a friend who has a relative, or maybe you just have a friend who is suffering from Alzheimer's. I hope not, but it's likely to be the case, or it could well be the case, since there's over 5 million Americans with Alzheimer's disease. Well, Dr. Mark Sager with us today. Really happy to have him back. He's executive director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Works out of Madison. And certainly if you have questions about Alzheimer's as we move along today, some of the research, what are the signs and so forth, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. If you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Dr. Mark Sager, welcome back. Nice to have you with us again.
Thank you.
And as I said, 5 million Americans, that's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. There are going to be increasing numbers of people with Alzheimer's disease simply because we're living longer. The estimates are that a baby girl born today has a 50-50 chance of living to the age of 100. And if that's true, a very substantial number of them will develop Alzheimer's disease.
So it really is a disease of the elderly then?
Actually, it's not. What we know is that Alzheimer's disease is a disease of a lifetime. For example, heart disease doesn't occur in 55-year-old men. It occurs, the arteries clog over a lifetime. And the only reason why persons older adults are more likely to develop symptoms is the fact that the brain has undergone decades of the disease before people develop symptoms. So the brain is a very resilient organism. The disease is slow, but there's good evidence that you can find pathological signs in people in their 20s and 30s.
So we can actually pick it up.
Yes, we can. The autopsy studies have been done in people, younger adults, involved in automobile accidents.
Oh.
So that's where we find evidence, pathologic evidence. But there are also suggestions that on certain MRI scans, PET scanning, that the disease is present in people in their middle age.
In middle age. And is it something you want to know?
I think that that's a good question. There's a lot of debate. I ask a lot of audiences if they want to know, and most people actually do. First of all, if you had 50%, just an example, if you had a 50% narrowing of one of your coronary arteries, you probably want to know. You might want to change your lifestyle. You might want to have your cholesterol checked, your blood pressure checked. And the same is probably true for any disease process, including Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah. Well, we have callers online waiting to talk with you. Rose in Milwaukee is up first. So let's go to Rose, who's been waiting a while. Rose, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, you know, you just mentioned middle age, and I was wondering, on the outset of maybe being in your 50s, can Alzheimer's start affecting your memory, you know, your short-term memory?
It's very interesting. What we're finding is that we're finding evidence for the disease using sophisticated technology, the functional MRI, PET scanning, which looks at glucose metabolism in the brain. But we're not finding evidence that people are actually having problems with their short-term memory, primarily because the brain adapts. You may be having changes in the area of the brain that affects learning and memory, but other areas of the brain compensate. And as a result, many people are just absolutely asymptomatic, and yet we're still finding evidence for the disease on these scans.
Hmm.
I was just wondering, because I was in a particular situation where a person had eaten and then an hour later were eating again and didn't remember they were eating.
That can happen.
Literally had totally forgotten.
Those are symptoms. Those are certainly symptoms compatible with Alzheimer's disease.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, and I may have mentioned this on the program before, but I When my mom was ill and we knew it was Alzheimer's, I used to take her to the zoo. She loved to go to the zoo, and we'd go every Saturday, and every week it was like a new she'd never been there before. So I could take her every week, and she had a wonderful time. Because she just couldn't remember. Doug in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for your show. And my sympathies go with you, Larry, because my dad suffered from dementia, and it was about a 3-year battle. And he, what they concluded was that he had had some form of dementia for a while, but that, as your guest had indicated, he had overcompensated or compensated by using various parts of his brain that was able to mask a little bit of it. But as he got older, you could detect before he slid, it was like a cascade effect, before he slid into this dark area. He was, somewhat articulate, but his speech was you could tell through his speech was affected. But my question to your guest is, and it was unfortunate that he did not have an autopsy, and we're still wondering sort of if that was a mistake, but they thought that he had a form of Lewy body dementia, and I wonder if your guest could talk a little bit about the distinction between that form of dementia and Alzheimer's, please.
Mm-hmm. Yes. First of all, Alzheimer's disease is the most common cause of dementia, accounting for 60 to 80%. Lewy body is also a dementing disorder, and unlike Alzheimer's disease, tends to have a few characteristics. First of all, people have Parkinsonian gaits. They walk like they can have problems with falls, hallucinations, very vivid hallucinations, can have a very vacillating course, too. In other words, some days someone with Lewy body will do better than others, which is not true for Alzheimer's disease. And classically, people with Lewy body dementia are very sensitive to antipsychotic drugs. In other words, they just can't tolerate them. Alzheimer's disease, on the other hand, is a slowly progressive dementia. People tend not to have good and bad days, tend not necessarily to start out with hallucinations as part of the complex, and tend not to be sensitive to the antipsychotic medications. So the distinction between the two is really clinical, but you're right. An autopsy would have shown distinct differences between Alzheimer's disease and Lewy body.
Hmm. Well, I'm sorry for your family, Doug, but I thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Dr. Mark Sager, our guest today, executive director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute, as we visit with him about Alzheimer's disease. He's giving us an update on what's going on with it, and I'm eager to ask him some questions about the research that's going on. Certainly, you may have a question, and if you do, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. There's a new book from Duke University that outlines a host of ways to keep even normal brains spry. And I'm wondering, you could talk a little, are you familiar with that book, Dr. Sager?
Yes, I am. It's an increasing number of books, periodicals talking about how to maintain your brain. They're recommending cognitive exercises, crosswords, games, a whole host of things, stress reduction, diet. There are increasing evidence that diet, stress reduction are important components to maintaining your brain. The problem is that the claims are much greater than the research evidence. And we can imagine. I would not expect, for example, that someone could take up crosswords or other cognitive stimulating activities and necessarily reduce or improve their cognition or reduce their risk for Alzheimer's disease in over a short period of time.
Yeah.
We would expect, for example, that a lifetime of cognitive activity would create cognitive reserve and make the brain resistant more resistant to diseases like Alzheimer's disease. But a computer game, a variety of things like that probably are not going to be beneficial in the short term, and there's no evidence, research evidence, that they're beneficial long term.
You have some research. I mean, talk a little bit about the research that you have ongoing.
Yes, we are studying adult children of people with Alzheimer's disease. And, Larry, you're certainly eligible for that
study.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to sign up for that if I can. I don't know if I'm eligible, but...
It's called the Wisconsin Registry for Alzheimer's Prevention. We have over 1,200 people throughout Wisconsin who are involved. We have adult children at mean age of 53 actually flying into Madison to be part of this part of the study. The thought was that what we would want to do if we were going to learn how to prevent this disease or delay the onset is to study a group of people who are at increased risk. And we have known for a long time that people with a family history are at increased risk. There seems to be a differential inheritance as well. If you have a mother with a disease, the risk seems to be higher.
Higher.
And if you have two parents with a disease, the risk is also higher.
Higher, yeah.
And we are finding evidence for what appears to be a unique family history gene that seems to be a very important risk factor for the disease. We and others are beginning to find evidence for very mild early disease in people in their 50s. And, again, that's not unusual. We would, as you alluded to earlier, we can find evidence for heart disease in people in their 50s. The question is, can we do anything about it? And we have spent decades and literally billions of dollars learning how to modify a person's risk of heart disease. We're just beginning to do that in Alzheimer's disease.
More call, and how do people sign? Could I sign up, for example, or how would people sign up if they were interested?
You could call our office at area code 608-829-3306. If you're in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee number is 414-219-5159. In Milwaukee, it's 414-219-5159.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Therese in Green Bay is up next. Hi, Therese.
Good morning.
Morning.
I want to say first, I am a participant in that research study.
Thank you.
And it's a great study, and I'm so glad to be a part of it. And I would encourage listeners who do have a parent with Alzheimer's to call those numbers and get involved, because it's a great way that we can help.
Yeah.
My question, however, is related to a drug I've heard about, which is being administered in a private clinic in California called, and I'll spell it for you, ETANERCEPT. It's an arthritis drug that this private clinic is using, and they're touting dramatic improvements in patients with Alzheimer's. And I was wondering if Dr. Sager could comment on that and why. I know it has, I do not believe it's been FDA approved for this particular usage, and I'm very intrigued by it.
I personally am not familiar with the drug. I do know that there are clinics and practitioners who are prescribing or using, corporations or small companies that are developing panaceas for and treatments for Alzheimer's disease. My concern is that, first of all, there is no research evidence whatsoever that many of these are beneficial. And I would also be concerned about the long-term risks. Our brain is a very resilient organ, but it also is susceptible to a variety of things that could have long-term consequences, not only for memory, but also for other functions. So as I said, unfortunately, I'm not familiar with this particular drug and can't comment.
Okay. Thanks very much for calling. Dr. Mark Sager, our guest today, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about Alzheimer's disease today with Dr. Mark Sager of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in and for participating. And Helen is online next, so let's just go to Helen. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry, and thank you, Mark, for being on this program. My father had Pick's disease and died about 25 years ago. He was a physician. My brother's also a physician and had dad full-body autopsy. I have two questions. Number one, is there anything in that autopsy that would be useful to the four of us children? And are there any likenesses between Pick's disease and your studies in Alzheimer's? Thank you.
Pick's disease is a what we call a frontal temporal lobe dementia. It involves the frontal and temporal lobes of the brain. And the autopsy finding should confirm the diagnosis of frontal temporal lobe dementia. Frontal temporal lobe dementia, or Pick's disease, varies from Alzheimer's disease in the sense that it tends to occur at younger ages, usually people middle age, tends to affect men more than women, and frequently is associated not initially with memory problems, but with behavioral or communication problems. And so in fact, many people with frontal temporal lobe dementia or Pick's disease wind up seeing psychiatrists because of the behavioral problems that occur early in the in the illness.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Did we answer? I think we got everything. Yeah. Thank you very much. Jonathan in Powers Lake, it's your turn next. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call. I got a quick question about keeping your mind active through all the years. My mother will be 81 this year, and she's got more degrees than a thermometer. She's going to night school well into her 70s and speaks three languages and is currently trying to learn Welsh and does those cryptograms, and she's always been a strong proponent of exercising the mind over all the years. And I was just wondering, you know, if someone's coming down with Alzheimer's, if keeping the mind active would help open other pathways.
It's a good question. There's no evidence that once you have the disease that cognitive stimulation has any significant effect on the course of the disease. However, there is evidence that a lifetime of cognitive activity, and my guess is that your mother has had a lifetime of cognitive activity, creates, again, a cognitive reserve, making the brain less likely to become symptomatic when it's subjected to a disease process like Alzheimer's disease. So we all should be learning new languages like your mother.
Well, sounds a good idea. I have to break open the French books. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, John, for calling it on to Kevin. Kevin in Farmington, Minnesota. Excuse me. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is twofold for Mark. What are some symptoms or some things, some identifiers that you could use? And I'm middle age. I'm 38, and I really, obviously, a lot of talk about Alzheimer's. I have it in two different places in my family, and really kind of been watching my short-term memory kind of decline over the past few years, and just wanting to know if there's anything specific to look for as a potential indicator for future getting this future disorder.
The first thing to remember is that the majority of us really are not at risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. As we get older, there are a couple of things that do happen, however. First of all, we have retrieval problems in the sense we don't forget things, but it takes a while to bring something from our memory to the front. What's important about normal aging is that it does not result in any disability, and the cognitive changes are not progressive. Unlike Alzheimer's disease, where a person will develop short-term memory loss and actually be unable to learn and will indeed forget, it is progressive and eventually leads to disability. Someone in their 30s or 40s probably may have evidence for the disease, just like someone may in their 30s or 40s may have evidence for heart disease, but will remain asymptomatic. And it's only when we look at certain areas of the brain with the special technological scans that we find evidence for it. So most people, even though they may be at increased risk, who may have evidence for the changes in their certain areas of their brain, usually are asymptomatic. And there's no way that you, as an individual, could identify evidence for the disease.
Thanks again, Kevin, for calling. Linda in Hilbert, it's your turn. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Actually, the doctor may have covered a little bit of it in the last question. Mine is, can a problem with word finding be an indicator of early Alzheimer's? And it sounds like that might be just part of the aging process. I'm in my early 60s, and I was just curious about that.
Well, what we know is that Alzheimer's disease, the primary symptom is truly short-term memory loss. But we also know that some patients can have word finding difficulty, and again, it's just having word finding difficulty, as I just did, should not be evidence for Alzheimer's disease unless it's progressive, gradually gets worse, and begins to affect your ability to communicate. That's when I would become concerned.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Linda. And Fred in Wisconsin Rapids, on to you. Hi, Fred.
Hi. I just wondered if the doctor is familiar with this company. I've been following it for several years, and they've got a drug out now called Tysabri that's done wonders for people with MS and Crohn's disease. It's the name of the company is Elan, and it's an Irish pharmaceutical company. And they're working in conjunction with Wyeth Company on a drug called AAB-001. And it's for Alzheimer's, and they're in phase 3 right now. And in July, all the listeners should be aware that they're going to be releasing their phase 2 data in July for this drug. And I think it could be very, very good for people. And it works on the principle of actually dissolving the, is it called amyloid, plaque in the brain. So they're working on four drugs, but this the one that's in phase 3 right now with phase 2 results will be coming forth in July. I just wondered if he was knowledgeable of Elan and Wyeth working on this drug.
Elan Pharmaceuticals, as you said, is an Irish pharmaceutical company, and they developed the vaccine approximately 6 or 7 years ago. And you may remember that there was a lot of excitement about the vaccine because it was dissolving the amyloid plaques in the brains of mice, of experimental mice. They then implemented a clinical trial and had a few cases of inflammation of the brain. In other words, they had patients who were reacting to the vaccine, and one person died. So they halted the clinical trial. What they have done now is to reformulate the vaccine, and as you said, have begun to actually are in phase 2 clinical trials, and it will be interesting to see what the results are. I had an opportunity to talk to people from Elan, and it appears that the vaccine is most effective in people who are identified at early stages of the disease. And you can imagine why that's true. The amyloid burden is less, the function of the brain is better, and hopefully we'll have some good results to report, as you said, in July. But I'm not familiar with those results.
All right. Thank you very much, Fred, for calling. Appreciate it. Well, something to look forward to hearing about. Sandy in Juneau, it's your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. We have a relative that passed away at age 68. There was an autopsy which revealed early Alzheimer's. She was a hoarder. Now, her two sons are also hoarders, and we're wondering if there is any correlation between, and these are extreme cases of hoarding, and Alzheimer's, and I'll take my answer off the phone.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with a direct or causing or a relationship between hoarding and Alzheimer's disease. I am aware of people who do not have Alzheimer's disease and who hoard, and I'm also aware of people who do have Alzheimer's disease and hoard. And in fact, in our memory clinic, we'll frequently have relatives bring in photographs of apartments and homes that are literally filled with just about everything. But that's an abnormal behavior, and it doesn't have to be a symptom of Alzheimer's disease.
All right. Beth in Richland Center, on to you. Hi, Beth.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
First of all, Larry, thank you very much for entertaining this topic. It's beautifully correlated with the chapter a day with Dr. Oliver Sacks reading about explorations of the mind.
That's right.
And Dr. Sager, I wanted to ask you, because we know that Dr. Richard Davidson and others have for some years now at the UW via the Health Emotions Research Institute been studying the effects of meditation upon not only mentation, but on the brain itself, and also the Mind and Life Institute, which can be found information if people are curious at mindandlife.org, have also discovered some very interesting correlations between meditative practice and brain function. I'm wondering what you could tell us, perhaps, about the effects of meditation upon minds that are challenged by disease such as Alzheimer's or dementia, or even the possible effects of strengthening people's minds so that there would be a different prospect, hopefully.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Beth. Dr. Sager?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. First of all, I'm not aware of studies in persons with Alzheimer's disease and meditation. One way to and there's a reason for that. First of all, if you have Alzheimer's disease, it's very difficult to learn. And as a result, teaching someone to do meditation who has Alzheimer's disease is probably very impossible, if not certainly very difficult. The important question, I think this is what you're getting at, and that is, is a lifetime of meditation, for example, is that likely to be beneficial? I'm aware that, again, meditation has appears to have affect activation in certain areas of the brain. I'm also aware that people who are at high levels of stress are at indeed a high risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. What we know is that stress destroys the hippocampus, which is the area of the brain that's important for learning and memory. And so it makes sense that stress reduction and meditation may be one way to do that is beneficial or could be beneficial in long term.
Thanks again for calling, Beth. And Bob in Hayward, it's your turn. Hi, Bob.
Thanks for taking my call,
sure.
Larry, Dr. Sager. My father, he was working, he pretty much always worried about things, pretty stressed out, and he retired about 2 years ago, and pretty shortly after retiring, he developed, like, he started losing his memory. He's having problems recognizing, like, he can't identify a fork versus a knife. Like, he'll just, the first thing he looks at, he keeps thinking that's what we're talking about. And it's not Alzheimer's, but it's some sort of dementia. I was just wondering if, Doctor, you've heard of anything like this before?
Now, I would have to know more before I could make a differential diagnosis. Mm-hmm. Again, it's kind of interesting that you commented that your father was chronically stressed, and again, that may be associated with his, may have increased his risk of developing a dementing disorder. Again, I would have to know more before I could make a diagnosis. Again, the classic hallmark of Alzheimer's disease is short-term memory loss. As I said, it can be associated with word-finding difficulty. Importantly, people with Alzheimer's disease show progressive, gradually progressive disorders, tend not to have personality changes, tend not to have verbal changes.
I'm wondering, thanks again, Bob, for calling. I'm wondering also about sleep. You talked about sleep, but or you talked about stress, but what about getting sufficient sleep? Does that help our brain? And is it, you know, people with sleep apnea, you're waking up and so forth, you're not really getting a good night's sleep?
No, sleep is very important. We require REM sleep, or rapid eye movement sleep, for our memory and for encoding. Students, for example, who cram for an exam and stay up all night are very unlikely to remember that a week later. And so you need sleep, you need the REM sleep to remember. Sleep apnea is a risk factor for dementing disorders. What happens in sleep apnea is that people obviously stop breathing, and the oxygen levels in their blood declines. And so it's very likely that it's this hypoxia, this low oxygen levels, that over a period of time chips away at the brain and makes a person at an increased risk of developing a dementing disorder.
Mm. Let's take some more calls. Mildred in Menominee, I believe, is up next. Hi, Mildred. Thank you for calling.
Hello. My husband had Alzheimer's. He died of kidney failure. Is it usual that they die of something else?
Alzheimer's disease patients frequently will die of complications of other disorders. It could be a pneumonia, it could be an overwhelming infection, could be kidney failure. But and many times the terminal events are complications of other illnesses and not necessarily the cognitive disorder.
All right, thank you, Marty in Milwaukee. On to you now. Hi, Marty.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm curious because I think a lot of us use the words Alzheimer's and dementia interchangeably. And my father passed away in March, and he was progressive memory loss. He finally was reinstitutionalized him, but he never changed his personality. He was a talker, and even when he no longer made any sense, he kept right on talking, if you know what I mean. But I'm kind of curious about named other subspecies of dementia so that, you know, Alzheimer's isn't the only example of dementia that we might refer to when we're thinking about this.
Yes, dementia is the general term, and there are numerous causes of dementia. Some of them we've already mentioned today. Lewy body is one example. Stroke is another cause of dementia. Frontal temporal lobe dementia is Huntington's chorea. There are a whole variety of lesser-known, rarer forms of dementia. But again, dementia is the general term. Alzheimer's disease accounting for 60 to 80%, and then the other causes filling in the remaining.
All right. Thank you, Marty, for calling. And Alice in Minneapolis up next. By the way, you can join in, too, if you have a question or comment. We've got some open lines. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. And now let's move on to Alice in Minneapolis. Hi, Alice.
Hi. My brother's 69, and a year and a half ago, he was diagnosed when he had a heart attack of having alcohol dementia, and they have him in an Alzheimer's home. And my question is, I go pick him up and take him to my house, but he has also stage 3 diabetes, and he's got arterial fibrillation of the heart or something. But he's not in good health. I emotionally am a wreck. I don't know what to do for him. I pick him up because I get him out of the home, and I also feel guilty because I have a life and he doesn't. Do you have any help for me?
Alcohol-related dementias are not common, fortunately. The typical finding in someone who's been a heavy drinker is, again, short-term memory loss without other areas of the cognition being affected. Unfortunately, any dementing disorder can lead to institutionalization. Obviously, will impair a quality of life. But your brother also has other complicating factors. One is the diabetes. Diabetes is a known risk factor for dementing disorders, primarily because, at least we think, that diabetes leads to narrowing of arteries, the small arteries in the brain, which again cause small strokes. Many times these strokes are unappreciated, increasing a person's risk of developing a dementing disorder.
What about support groups? Now, are there support groups that Alice might be able to turn to for? I mean, she sounds like she's at her wit's end here.
I know that in Minneapolis, if I remember correctly, the phone calls from Minneapolis, the Minneapolis does have a chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. They're in the phone book. I would give them a call. Support groups are definitely beneficial. Stress reducers and will help you cope as a caregiver.
Yeah.
Can I have one quick?
Sure.
Does that help him that I get him out? I take him for like 5 days at a time. He can hardly walk because his feet are so swollen. But I take him out of the home and take him to my house, which I sometimes really stresses me, but I want to do it for him. Am I helping him out by getting him out of there?
I think so, yes. I think that does he have,
but then when he comes to my house, he just sits there.
Well, but the issue, too, though, is that it's stimulation, it's familiarity.
Okay.
All of those things are important.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling, Alice, and good luck to you. Carol in Wisconsin Rapids is up next. Dr. Sager, hi, Carol.
Hi. Thank you for having this program. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I recently lost a brother to Alzheimer's. He was 77. I have another brother who's 83 who has been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and we all also have celiac disease as a little gift from our parents.
Oh.
So I'm wondering about the connection between nutrition and Alzheimer's.
That's a good. We're increasingly aware of the fact that we are what we eat. It's not only if we're eating high cholesterol diets, we're certainly at risk of developing heart disease. We're also well aware of the fact that, for example, obesity is a risk factor for developing Alzheimer's disease. High cholesterols in midlife are risk factors for Alzheimer's disease. Omega-3 fatty acids in fish tend to be beneficial. Mm-hmm. Diets that are high in antioxidants tend to be beneficial and to reduce a person's risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. We are what we eat. It's true for the heart and it's true for the brain. And in general, what's good for the heart is also good for the brain.
Okay. Well, we were all diagnosed very late in life. I was 60. My brother in Ohio is 78. Is there any connection with early celiac disease and Alzheimer's at all?
I am not aware of a connection, no.
Good.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. And Mary in Malone, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm a participant in the RAP program that you have, Dr. Sager, and my died at 84, about 10 years, complications of Alzheimer's. And I have a question about the probability for my children. Her father had Parkinson's. Her sister has Parkinson's. The paternal grandmother had dementia due to several mini strokes. And now just recently, my father at 91 was diagnosed with Parkinsonian symptoms, not Parkinson's.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, do those things all increase my children's possibility of developing Alzheimer's?
They increase your risk, but not necessarily your children's risk.
Okay.
The recent study was published looking at people who had parents with Alzheimer's disease. If you had two parents with Alzheimer's disease, your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease by the age of 75 was 43%. So it was fairly phenomenal. The study also began to suggest that if you had aunts and uncles with the disease, that did not necessarily increase your risk. What they didn't report on, because of the nature of the study, they didn't report on the risk of you, for example, developing Alzheimer's disease when only one parent had the disorder.
Oh. Okay. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Well, I'm glad Mary brought up the study because it seems like a good place to end here, and that is, for those people who have a parent with Alzheimer's, you have got a study that people can get involved in.
Yes, and if you're in the Madison area, you can call area code 608-829-3306.
3306. Oh, it's not 3300. I had 3300. 3306. Okay, and in Milwaukee area, there's another.
Area code 414-219-5159.
5159.
Right.
Dr. Sager, a pleasure. Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
And thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Dr. Mark Sager is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute, the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And you know what? I'm going to give that number a call, 829-3306, and get signed up too, because my mom died from Alzheimer's. And who knows? It probably won't help me, but maybe it'll help somebody down the road. And I guess that's a pretty good thing, too. So I'll sign up. Why don't you sign up, too, if you're in that kind of situation? We'd love to. The more the merrier, I think, so as to speak. Well, I'll tell you what. Coming up, we're going to change gears here a bit and talk with you about pairing wines and cheeses. Philippe Cocard of Wallersheim Winery and Ken Montelioni of Fromagination of Madison's Capitol Square. Guests coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.